The following is a talk given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on June 8, 1993 at Murari Sevak Farm in Mulberry, Tennessee. The class begins with a reading from the Vaishnava K, number 16.
ফাল্গু বৈরাগী সেনা পারে কবু হইতে বৈষ্ণব হরিপদচারী নিজনতা বারি লোভিয়া কি ফল ফাল্গু সে ভৈভাব
Someone who falsely renounces as material objects, someone who falsely renounces as material objects which can actually be utilized in devotional service to Lord Krishna, is known as a Falgu Vairagi. Due to false pride, he claims to be a great renunciate. However, by his practice of dry renunciation, a Falgu Vairagi is never able to become a Vaishnava, a pure devotee of Lord Krishna. Discarding the eternal shelter of pure devotional service to the lotus feet of Guru and Lord Krishna, the Falgu Vairagi may practice what may appear to be Krishna conscious in his separate or solitary home away from the Krishna conscious association of the society of devotees. But what transcendental result does he achieve for all his efforts? Whatever so-called Krishna conscious result he is achieving is simply a form of material illusion with no actual eternal Krishna conscious value. Purport. The Falgu Vairagi is one who has falsely renounced. A Falgu Vairagi may either be an impersonalist who renounces the material world for achieving liberation, or he may be a devotee who has separated himself from the association of the devotees in a show of renunciation and so-called solitary worship. The Falgu Vairagi's renunciation is superficial and is not pleasing to Guru and Krishna. The impersonalist Falgu Vairagi proudly boasts, "I am the most renounced. Others are materially attached. I have given up so many material things. I am liberated." The impersonalist Falgu Vairagi's outlook is devoid of devotional service. His reference point is the material world. What to speak of being a Vaishnava, he is not even complete in his renunciation. Even great sannyasis are considered Falgu Vairagis if their renunciation is not in devotional service to Krishna. According to Srila Rupa Goswami, since Prakashananda Saraswati was not engaged in the Lord's devotional service, his sannyasa is to be considered Falgu Vairagya. This means that since he did not know how to use things for the Lord's service, his renunciation of the world was artificial. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya 17.116. Sometimes someone practicing devotional service may also be a Falgu Vairagi if the devotional service is performed in neglect of the orders of the spiritual master, or if, being bewildered by false ego, he considers himself to be one of the eternal associates of the Lord. Such a devotional Falgu Vairagi may also leave the association of devotees, thinking of himself, quote, "I am a great devotee. I am most pure in my devotional service. Others are impure and unworthy to associate with. Therefore, I can no longer associate with them. I am renounced and advanced in my realization while others are neophytes. Therefore, I am practicing Krishna consciousness independently," unquote. Falgu Vairagis artificially inflated in false pride of being a so-called advanced Vaishnava enable him to whimsically deviate the orders of his spiritual master. He is actually devoid of real pure devotional service, although due to false ego he considers himself the purest of devotees. The varieties of Falgu Vairagis and their excuses for avoiding surrender to authorized programs of devotional service are virtually unlimited, but the basic characteristics of mental speculation and dry renunciation are the most common. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught that proper renunciation and devotional service should be practiced. Translation from Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya 23.105. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then told Sanatana Goswami about proper renunciation according to a particular situation, and the Lord forbade dry renunciation and speculative knowledge in all respects. The imagined peace of mind a Falgu Vairagi feels is far removed from the bliss of Krishna consciousness. Actually, such an attitude is in complete opposition to the devotional mood of serving and satisfying Krishna. Lord Krishna taught that he is more pleased when his devotee cooperates together, when his devotees cooperate together in devotional service. Rather, it was Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's special request that all persons should cooperate together to spread the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. Again, translation from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi 9:35. I am the only gardener. How many places can I go? How many fruits can I pick and distribute? Purport. Here Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu indicates that the distribution of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra should be performed by combined forces. Although he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he laments, how can I act alone? How can I alone pick and distribute it all over the world? This indicates that all classes of devotees should combine to distribute the Hare Krishna Mahamantra without consideration of time, place, or situation. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi 9:35. Real renunciation means to do that which is pleasing to the Lord. The Lord has taught that the priority of the present day and age is to cooperate together to propagate the message of Lord Krishna to the conditioned souls. This process of Sankirtana Yajna, or congregational chanting of the holy names of the Lord, is a cooperative effort to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Devotees who do this are the most dear to Lord Krishna. Krishna guarantees their success. Translation from Bhagavad Gita. For one who explains the supreme secret to the devotees, devotional service is guaranteed. And at the end, he will come back to me. There is no servant in this world more dear to me than he, nor will there ever be one more dear. Bhagavad Gita 18:68-69. Renunciation does not mean to renounce the association of devotees or the order of the previous spiritual masters. The mind can be so treacherous that it may become envious of sincere devotees and simply absorbed in pointing out the so-called defects of others. This offensive attitude may enable the mind to sufficiently bewilder the intelligence, but one then considers it auspicious to renounce devotional service, thus causing one spiritual annihilation. All these activities may outwardly appear to be renunciation, but they are simply steps of regression from the spiritual platform back to material conditioned life. The real standard of renunciation has been described by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Chaitanya Charitamrita by quoting the Bhagavad Gita 12:13-20. Translation. One who is not envious, but who is a kind friend to all living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor, who is free from false ego, equal in both happiness and distress, always satisfied, forgiving and self-controlled, who is engaged in devotional service with determination, and whose mind and intelligence are dedicated to me. He is very dear to me. He for whom no one is put into difficulty and who is not disturbed by anxiety, who is liberated from jubilation, anger, fear, and anxiety, is very dear to me. A devotee who is not dependent on others, but dependent solely on me, who is clean inwardly and outwardly, who is expert indifferent to material things, without cares, free from all pains, and who rejects all pious and impious activities, is very dear to me. One who neither rejoices nor hates, who neither laments nor desires, who renounces both auspicious and inauspicious things, and who is devoted to me, is very dear to me. One who is equal to friends and enemies, who is equipoise in honor and dishonor, heat and cold, fame and infamy, who is always free from contamination, always grave and satisfied with anything, who does not care for any residence, and who is fixed in devotional service, is very dear to me. He who thus follows the imperishable religious principle of Krishna consciousness with great faith and devotion, fully accepting me as the supreme goal, is very, very dear. So here Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, he gave guidelines on how we are to act, how a devotee's consciousness should be. One who is not envious, but who is a kind friend to all living entities. What does it mean to be non-envious? What is envy? Envy, when you want to see the downfall of somebody else, would that be a definition? You wish harm on someone else, or you cannot tolerate to see the success of someone else, or you want to have what they have, yeah, at their expense. Not, you can have, that's quite a good point, because say someone has pure devotion, oh, I want to have pure devotion too. That's not enviousness. But oh, someone, because this is not spiritual, but materially, say someone has something and they want to steal from him or want to cheat him or want to create some problem and then somehow I can get that position or I can get that object. So the envy is a very big obstacle in spiritual life. Actually, it's like the original sin to be envious. Even in the, it's very hard to understand sometimes because of a lack of a disciplic succession. The real inner meaning of the allegories given in the Bible. But was it first one where Adam and Eve and there's the forbidden apple? It basically seems like envy. They want something that Krishna has that they're not supposed to have. And so they take it without his permission. Something which they can't really have. It's not theirs to have. So because of envy, but what it actually that story means, I don't ask me because I just, but it just, apparently it appears like that. Whatever I said, that's all I know on it. But we know from Srila Prabhupada that envy is the one vice which cannot be dovetailed in Krishna consciousness very easily. Or Krishna used envy against the enemies of his devotees, like Hiranyakashipu or Kamsa. Apart from that, the envy is not usable, especially not against devotees. Greed, you can be greedy to have so many nice devotees for Krishna, have so many nice things to offer Krishna, nice flower garden, nice project, nice temple. Even anger, if somebody offends the guru or Krishna, to be angry can be dovetailed. The other vices of lust, anger, greed, madness, and illusion can be dovetailed, but envy is very difficult to dovetail. Direct consideration with devotees or spiritual things, it cannot be dovetailed. So, Krishna is saying, one who is non-envious, but who is a kind friend to all living entities. A devotee wishes well to everyone. Prabhupada stressed how a Vaishnava is pura dukkha dukhi. He's sad to see others suffer. So, that's a real friend. Sometimes even you see that close friends, even conjugal couples, due to some kind of reversal in their relationship, they express things which are very unkind. to each other, and they wish ill on one another. This is actually against the devotional principle to do that to anybody. What to speak of to someone who's near and dear. Even a stranger in the street, we don't wish ill to him. But somehow, due to the influence of Kali Yuga, even mothers and children and parents and children and brothers and wives and husbands, close relations, sometimes they get into such discussions where they actually verbally wish ill on another, or even they may physically sometimes do harm, which is more worse than wishing ill, is it doing ill, right? So, but here it says the quality of a devotee is to be kind to everyone. Everyone. I mean, what to speak of your own loved ones or own relations, but everyone. Due to the nature of material world, we're trying to control the situation in the material world. When it gets out of control, we get so angry. And then anyone that's obstructing our ability to control the material nature. And that happens a lot with near and dear ones because they're closer, so they can obstruct you more. But a devotee is to rise above these situations because our purpose is really not to control the material nature. The extent that we control the material nature is to control it, to use it in the service of Krishna. If somebody is obstructing devotional service, then we may get angry and we may take whatever steps are needed so that devotional service won't be obstructed. But that wouldn't include any unkind desire to cause any suffering to another person. You know, there's some demon who's beating on the devotees will sometimes say, you know, there's some kshatriyas around, their duty is to protect. But even in the Vedas, you see the kshatriya, if a person would surrender to the kshatriya and say, okay, I surrender, the kshatriya would not kill that person. Just like now America is trying to apply certain moral standards. I don't know how much it's in line with the Manu Samhita. But like if somebody is unarmed and a person is armed and you shoot him, or you do violence on a person more than was necessary for self-defense, then later you can get hauled off to court and have to, you know, you can get sentenced, even if it's proven that you've done such a thing. So that was also the principle that kshatriyas were very controlled. Of course, in a war situation, fight to the finish, then it's like another situation. But under normal dealings, you can see even how when Krishna caught Rukmi, the brother of Rukmini. And because Rukmini requested and it was his offense was not so great, so then he said, okay, I'll spare him. And just gave him a funny haircut, let him go, because he was being very naughty. So the Lord would show it also in the case of Aswatthama. That was a mercy case on the request of Draupadi. Sometimes very Krishna-conscious women have compassion. They're able to add that feminine quality of compassion to the whole situation. Of course, you had the Ramayan play where you had another very pious lady. You had a Rakshasi, Suparnaka. She was not imbibing the feminine qualities of compassion. She wanted vengeance. She was a Rakshasi. She was a man-eater, cannibal. So she was lusty, greedy, angry, envious. That's their nature. So here there's a devotee. So devotee is to avoid Rakshasa qualities, demoniac qualities, and take godly qualities. So these are the qualities. To not be envious, but to be a kind friend to all living entities. Who does not think himself a proprietor. It's an interesting point. Because first you start off, don't be envious and be kind. But don't consider oneself a proprietor. Because thinking oneself a proprietor is one of the main things that gets one into enviousness and being unkind to people. Even in India, in the village, you find that big fratricidal wars are there because people proprietorship over land. You've taken 1 foot of my land. You put the fence on my land. Just trying to get over it, spats. Of course, according to the Karmakanda, people have a right to defend their land and all that. But just over this proprietorship, things become ready. Blown up. So devotee, he doesn't think he's the proprietor because he knows Krishna is the proprietor. So if he does something, it's to protect Krishna's property. Even the husband is supposed to consider that his wife is not his property, it's Krishna's property. His duty is to protect the wife. Of course, if she agrees to be protected. Nowadays, sometimes women, they don't think they need any protection, so then it's hard to be a husband. That goes the other way also. Some men, they don't protect. We won't get into all those details, but anyway. The point here is not to consider oneself a proprietor. How do we do that? You think Krishna is a proprietor. That can go out to our position. I'm not the owner of the position of this service. It's Krishna's service, Guru's service. He's giving me this service. He's a proprietor. Even this body, everybody considers, well, this is my body. Body belongs to me. So many times you meet bewildered people and they say, well, I can do whatever I want to my body. It's my body, isn't it? If I want to smoke cigarettes and give it cancer or TB, you know, it's my body to destroy. Or women, it's my body. If I want to kill the embryo in my body, it's extension of my body, then what's the problem? And at present time, because of this proprietorship, the people are killing each other in Serbia or Croatia or wherever the place was, in Bosnia. Everybody's claiming that this land belongs to the Serbs or to the Croats or to the Muslims. And it's such a hellish situation. So you wonder how there'll be peace in the world. And remember how Prabhupada, he gave us the peace formula. Bhaktaram Jagatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. That the proprietor of all religious activities, the proprietor of sacrifices, penances, the proprietor not only of this planet, not only of all the lands and seas and sky and this planet, but all the universes, all the planets, the entire universe. Bhakta Ram Jagatapasam Sarva Loka. Sarva Loka means all the planets. Maheshwaram, the Supreme Lord over all the planets, the Supreme Proprietor, is Krishna. He's our friend, so that's all right. If he's the proprietor, that's all right, because he's everybody's friend. He's not going to kick you off the planet, right? So this is my planet, Hiranyaka. Nobody here can do worship to Krishna anymore. Get off my planet. That's not very nice. Where am I going to go if I have to get off the planet? That's your problem. That's a demoniac, you know. Get off my land. This is now my land. This is Serbia. No, this is Musulmania, whatever. Bosnia. No, this is Croatia. Get off of here. Croatia for the Croats. Serbia for the Serbs. Bosnia for the Muslims. But the whole world, the proprietor is Krishna, and everybody is a son of Krishna, a daughter of Krishna, a spiritual part of Krishna is for everybody. So this simple concept was really propagated widely, there would not be this type of war. There'd be a basis for establishing. But people are trained from their childhood. You are Muslim, you are Christian, you are Croat, you are Serbian, you are Chinese, you are Indian, you are Hindu, you are Sikh, you are Muslim, you are Jew. And they identify, and then they get a sense of proprietorship over their own identity, which is all a superficial identity and a false identification. Think of the proprietor over actually nothing that belongs to them. When they leave this body, what do they own? Their so-called identity, where does it go once they take birth again? Someone may be born in a Christian family, next life they may be born in a Muslim family. These faiths, though, are not our eternal designation or identity. They don't belong to us, really. What belongs to us is service to Krishna. The way we serve, the little details and rituals, those are changed. But the act of serving, surrendering, that doesn't change in all religions. So Krishna consciousness is dealing with the essence. Those aspects of religion which never change, those aspects of life which are eternal, which are inseparable from the living end, that's what we can claim proprietor over. I am the devotee of Krishna. This is my right to serve Krishna. No one can take that away from me, to chant his name, to serve him. Of course not that our service to Krishna should cause distress on everybody else. That's covered later on down the line. But we got in our own non-confrontational manner to do a devotional service favorable to Krishna. That's everybody's right. So does not think himself a proprietor who is free from false ego. Well, if that was too long, if it was too far, distant to start it when I saw proprietorship over your identity, if that was too, if I was stretching it in proprietorship, well, anyway, Krishna has covered that in the next phrase. Free from false ego. In any case, definitely, without any stretch of the imagination, it's false ego when we identify with the body. And with the bodily identification, people are considering in all the ways I explained. Like Prabhupada, the first thing he did when he came to America, people said, why should we follow an Indian religion? We're Americans. India's a poor country, we're a rich country. So many similar points. And then Prabhupada, he said, you're not American, you're not Indian, you're not Chinese or Russian, you're not this body, you're a pure spirit soul. So if we're free from the false ego, then we can advance in Krishna consciousness as long as we are identifying with the false ego. That's a big obstacle. Then we have a next statement here. It's equal in both happiness and distress. How can one do that? How can one be equal in happiness and distress? Nirguna has an answer. Anybody else has an answer?
Okay, Nirguna. I am being steadfast in one service, no matter what.
Jai Chaitanya? Anandadas. Okay, he's Jai Chaitanya, Anandadas. Okay, Anandadas, do you want to add something? Well, toleration is included in what he said. To remain steady in our service. For a devotee, this is all about devotees. So if equal in happiness and distress, that means someone has devotional service. And sometimes material life gives one happiness. I had a disciple who was doing devotional service and got an inheritance. When they got the inheritance, they said, well, I was doing devotional service because I was suffering in the material world. Now I got an inheritance. I got so much money. Why should I do devotional service? I can enjoy. He left the temple and spent the money on all Kali Yuga activity. Felt totally, you know. So happiness, when he got a little material happiness, you know, here he got the money, then he completely lost it. You know, later on he came like a dog with a tail between his legs, you know, after some months, you know, totally wiped out, lost all his money, and suffering like anything, then I want to be back in devotional service. Not only once, he did about 3 times. Now he's a congregational member. It's hopeless. But anyway, we have hope eventually. Somehow he's doing service. So happiness. Equal in happiness. Sometimes Krishna gives so much happiness that one thinks, oh, I'm getting material happiness, so now what do I need devotional service for? That's not being equal. And sometimes one gets suffering. Terminal diseases, family problems, adi-atmic, adi-daivik, adi-bhautik, so many different types of kleshas are there. This world is filled with, you know, we can go on, you know, make an encyclopedia of all the difficulties you can face, right? So there's a happiness and distress. And when those things happen, if one remains fixed in doing devotional service, look at Draupadi. What distress? Husbands were helpless, she was being tortured, and attempt of rape practically was being performed she took shelter in Krishna. Instead of just breaking down, she just took shelter of Krishna. She started crying out in Krishna's name. She didn't get depressed and just, you know, throw in the towel and say, okay, I'm finished, everything's gone. She just knew that Krishna is the only one who can save me. And then Krishna, she just took shelter of Krishna. Krishna saved her. Then she's the queen of the entire world. So much success. But then her sleeping children, they had their heads cut off. For a mother losing her children, and not only losing it by natural cause, but just in a heinous way. You go in and see decapitated children. So naturally she was crying and naturally she was affected, but then did she give up her devotional service? No, she never, you know, after the immediate shock was over, she kept on with her devotional service. She said, oh Krishna, whatever happened, but I'm never leaving your lotus feet. The heroine of incomparable proportions. So you never, someone, you know, who has more happiness or more distress, you know, is a complete empress of the entire civilized world. So much happiness. But she doesn't give up doing her daily worship to Krishna. And when she's also, in spite of so much happiness, she's put into more distress, incomparable kinds of distress. And she also remains fixed in her devotional service. So you can understand why she is so very dear to Krishna. Always satisfied. The devotee does his service. Whatever Krishna provides for the devotee personally, the devotee accepts that this is Krishna's mercy. Of course, in our desire to please Krishna, the devotee may not be satisfied. But that's not, this is regard to our personal material being satisfied. For serving Krishna, the devotee always can want more, better, nicer, improved standard in a positive way. Forgiving and self-controlled. Right, in this material world, who doesn't make mistakes? We want Krishna to forgive our mistakes. So it's also our duty to forgive others' mistakes, especially if they're asking for forgiveness. Sometimes the devotees, they're forgiving even when people don't ask. Because they understand what is the nature of material life. People are under the modes. Don't forgive them, they know not what they do. Haridas Thakur, he was being whipped by these executioners, and no, they weren't asking forgiveness, they were going on whipping him, but still he was praying to Krishna forgive them because they don't know what they're doing. I deserve to be punished because I have committed so many sins. And Krishna had to come and he had to absorb the hits, the whips, and protect his devotee. So devotees are forgiving, also they know that if I'm being put in difficulty by someone, it's not that person really who is the primal cause. The person is also the instrument to give me suffering. I deserve to be getting put into some kind of suffering for some previous karmas I have performed, some purification I have to go through. So rather than consider that person to be the cause, the devotee is always considering the ultimate causes, the higher causes, and therefore they can be very forgiving at the when it's their own regard. Of course, somebody's coming and trying to attack the deities or something, they may not be very forgiving at that moment because we won't want to protect the deities. But it's interesting how there was one person who was, you heard that story of Achyutananda number two, the counterfeit Achyutananda. It's a very interesting story how there was one man who studied the Krishna consciousness movement and saw that how effective we were for collecting money, in India at least. And he was a materialist, married man, but he put on sannyasi robes and shaved his head and called himself Achyutananda. And he somehow got receipts from ISKCON, gave a donation, got a receipt, so he made a receipt copy. Jaipur, in Rajasthan, in India. So people were showing up in Bombay with life membership cards and things signed by Achyutananda. I said, coming from Jaipur. And they said, Achyutananda, oh yeah, he's there. We just give the money to Achyutananda. But Achyutananda, everyone knew he was at that time in Hyderabad or somewhere in South India. They said, well, how is that possible? So then some devotee, some task force was sent out to figure out who is this Achyutananda number two. And they found, you know, that there was somebody out there collecting, and he had made a big project design, you know, with a picture of a temple they're going to build, and he was collecting good, a couple lakhs of rupees, a couple hundred thousand rupees. So they broke into his, I don't know, somehow they got into his room, maybe they walked in, I don't know. Anyway, they found he's got rubber stamps of ISKCON and all the papers and things. So they took that and they took him to Srila Prabhupada. So Srila Prabhupada, he called the police chief, the district superintendent, and all the big police officers, Indian Police Service, IPS, big cadre, it's like national cadre, they were all there to arrest this guy. But the person said, I wanted to speak with Prabhupada personally for a few minutes. He said that actually, I did this wrong, I admit it. I'm really sorry. But having your association and seeing everything, I want to surrender. I take shelter of you. You're a saint and I want to serve you. So then Prabhupada told the police that he's taking shelter of me. I can't turn him over anymore. But he told them, but if you stay here and you follow, then you're safe. But if you try to leave, then we turn you over. And he engaged him in some translation, some, just to give him some service, like he should translate from Hindi to English, or whatever, English to Hindi. And he was there for a couple of weeks, forget how long exactly. He was there doing some service. But one morning, one devotee spotted him trying to leave at Mangal Arati time with his bag. By the will of Providence, someone was a little late for Mangal Arati, he came and grabbed him, brought him to Prabhupada. He said, I gave you a chance, but you didn't give up your cheating ways, now you're trying to leave. He said, well, I have to turn you over to the police. But Prabhupada was so forgiving that if someone wanted to surrender to Krishna, really wanted to change his ways, he was willing to forget everything. Of course. So this is a quality of a devotee, forgiving and self-controlled. Especially when anger is, you know, anger is so hard to control. To control one's mind, to be forgiving. It's interesting how they put forgiving and self-control, because, I mean, sometimes, like some devotee was offended, and then the offending devotee said, wow, no, I beg your forgiveness, I'm sorry. But they're like so angry, they said, I mean, you're just gonna ask forgiveness and I gotta, and that's all? I mean, like I can't get any vengeance, I can't do anything to you, I can't, you know, it was like this. And they came in and complained to me and said, look at this person, you know, does something wrong and just comes and asks forgiveness and then that's all, you know. Yeah, really, you know. It's so hard to control the anger, you know. Well, do you think the person was just sincere about asking forgiveness? Maybe. But it's that easy? And I was like, of course, you know, that's where, what is the proper way of dealing with any circumstance? That's where it requires some self-control. Parikshit Maharaj, he was so angry against Kali for beating the Akali. He was going to kill him on the spot. When Kali surrendered, then he controlled himself. Why? Because there were religious principles. We're guided by religious principles. Krishna consciousness is a way of life. And to do, what not to do, there's religious principles. That's why the Kshatriyas, they also took a lot of religious training. So they would know what to do, what not to do. And then on some areas, if they weren't sure what to do, they had the brahmanas to ask, what is the thing I should do now? In fact, every king had his assembly of brahmanas. And any major issue, he'd submit to them. But they took 40 days time. Research it thoroughly, because if they gave a verdict, it would be completely. I mean, if up to 30. They could give it sooner, but that was the maximum time limit they had to thoroughly research and give a definitive verdict. So that requires certain self-control, who is engaged in devotional service with determination, and whose mind and intelligence are dedicated to me. So here you have engaged in devotional service with determination. That's the physical aspect of doing the devotional service. Someone might be engaged in devotional service, but when the other aspect is your mind and intelligence is also dedicated to me. That the mind and intelligence is also totally absorbed in the devotional service. Sometimes someone may be doing the devotional service externally, but they're thinking in their mind that maybe I should do this, or maybe I should do that. So they're not really dedicating their mind and intelligence to Krishna. Or someone's doing devotional service, but in their intelligence they're thinking, well, if I do it in this way, then I can get this kind of material result. Or they put some other objective, other goal. So Krishna here is saying that the mind and intelligence should also be dedicated, and one should be determined in devotion. That person is very dear. So you can read through the verse very fast, you read through the verse, but if you go, I mean, you could discuss each one of these phrases in great depth. I'm sure every devotee has so many realizations. It says, giving his devotees the guidelines. That's only one out of the first six here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Krishna is giving us so many guidelines here. For whom no one is put into difficulty. I know a few, these are rare, but I know a few devotees, members of our movement or previous members, who they had a certain quirk in there, a certain unique character, where they like to put other people in difficulty. Different varieties. Some people are the more subversive kind where they'll tell one person this story, tell another person another story, and they get the two people to fight with each other, they stand back and kind of like. Then there's some people who are just oblivious, like it's my service, and you know, and they just kind of bulldoze everybody else aside. It's like when Hanuman was throwing the mountaintops and he was telling the little squirrel to split, get out of my way, but Ram said, listen, don't think that you're the only one doing service. You're doing it up to your capacity. That squirrel is also doing up to his capacity. Some people call it the spider. I saw a written story, it was a squirrel. So anyway, everyone knows the story. The Krishna is accepting everyone's service according to their capacity. So just because someone can do more service, he shouldn't take that as an excuse that I can obstruct people who do less service. Shouldn't put other people into difficulty. Even it says if an uttam adhikari puts a kanishta adhikari into a serious difficulty in their spiritual life, through some kind of conscious, whatever, through some certain way of dealing, there's certain circumstance where even an uttam adhikari can fall down for that. It's not because someone's more advanced, he can kind of just like, okay, out of the way. No one else can do any devotional service. I'm here. Rather, uttamadhikari should be more conscious to encourage the younger or the less fixed up devotees in their devotional service. Eventually, if they continue in devotional service, they may also be uttamadhikaris in due course. But if we obstruct their service, or somebody obstructs someone else's service, then they're obstructed. They can't go forward. They have enough problem with their own mind and their own physical and material situation to deal with that. But to speak of another devotee causing difficulty, someone's trying to serve their spiritual master, develop some faith in the process. Somebody comes up and lays a whole number on their brain, destroys their faith or disturbs their faith, shakes their whole foundation in Krishna consciousness. There are people who do that, put others into difficulty. So Krishna, he's saying here that a devotee should be someone who no one has put into difficulty for that, because of that devotee. And who is not disturbed by anxiety. Here comes the steadiness situation again. For material anxieties, one shouldn't be lose their determination to serve Krishna. What's so amazing now is in the com, there's in the link in San Diego, the electronic mail service that the BBT and the communication ministry is providing, they give out some news about from the devotees in Sarajevo. To how they were distributing prasada, but now there's no more food, so they're just somehow surviving. I said some people are actually growing vegetables in their bathtub. Any little on the rooftop, anywhere they can put some dirt, they grow vegetables. Because there's no supermarkets, there's no stores, there's nowhere. Where do you get food? And they're having weekly programs inviting people to come chant Hare Krishna. And it says, you know, you walk in the street, there's grenades falling, there's, you know, snipers everywhere. Still they're having programs, 50 people, somehow during the week they can't really go out and do book distribution now, so they're just trying to survive. And they do programs in the hospitals, they can't do Harinam, so they go to the hospitals and they try to encourage the people there that are injured. They're doing as much service, public service as they can before they're giving out prasadam. So here you see like it's practically living hell. I mean, and they give the details which are, I can't even, like mentally you block them out. They're so heavy, the situations that how these devotees are still continuing on with their devotional service with the determination. And certainly they're in a situation well worth being in anxiety about. So, it says here, not disturbed by anxiety. There are going to be causes in the material world to be anxious. But that shouldn't disturb our devotional service, our faith in Krishna. We have to deal with the good things and with the bad things that happen. You know, someone may be in San Francisco, everything's all right, all of a sudden an earthquake hits. So a lot of times people, they get disturbed by anxiety and they just lose it. They don't know what to do. They get hysterical, go into shock. So somebody at that moment, you just think, Krishna, please help me. What should I do now? What's the right thing for me to do in your service? And then Krishna helps his devotees. Gives them the intelligence what to do. Sometimes devotees are put in anxiety, they don't know what to do. Then there are some weak devotees, they want to go, they go out and take a, you know, they fall down, they take intoxication as a means to alleviate their anxiety. So the only way we can be able to do this, you see, if you... This is like such a tall order. The only way one can do it is really take shelter of Krishna. Chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Read Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Prabhupada's books. Us with the senior devotees, they hear some Krishna conscious instruction. Absorb in devotional service, worshipping the deities or something. We have to learn to take shelter of Krishna. Everyone, every devotee needs to know how to take shelter of Krishna when anxiety comes. And nobody will be free from anxiety. The question here is not to be disturbed by it, not to let our devotional service be disturbed by the anxiety. But our desire to Krishna should be unflinching, should go on. Desire to serve Krishna. Who is liberated from jubilation, anger, fear, and anxiety is very dear to me. We may not immediately come up to all these standards, but this is like a goal. We should know, like something, well, Prabhu, I'm not a pure devotee. I can't do all these things. And it's like, you know, why try? But that's, we can't do anything. That's true. But Krishna is more powerful than Maya. You take shelter of Krishna, that Krishna will deliver us from this attachment to jubilation, anger, and so on. He will deliver us from these bad qualities. Therefore, we had to try to be a pure devotee. We may not be pure devotees, but we have to try to be as pure a devotee as we can. To be a pure devotee is not difficult. Just have the pure desire to want to be a pure devotee is, Prabhupada explained, if we want to be a pure devotee, that is the unripe stage of being a pure devotee. And someone who takes initiation or is aspiring to be an initiated devotee, that means that they have committed themselves to wanting to be a pure devotee and to acting accordingly, to accepting what's ever favorable, rejecting what's ever unfavorable. So that under no circumstance does an initiated devotee, at least, or anyone who's committed to the path of devotional service, have any reason or excuse or cause to say that, well, I'm not a pure devotee, so I can't do that. Because even a pure devotee would never take the position, I'm a pure devotee, so I'm doing it. Pure devotees also always take the humble position, I'm aspiring to be a pure devotee, under most circumstances. The Prabhupada said, just like if you have a green banana or a green mango, you keep it, then it turns into a ripe mango, a ripe banana. We have practical experience of this. In South America, we have our temples in Ecuador, and that's one of the major exporting nations of banana exporters in the world. You can get Ecuadorian bananas in Europe and America, all over. So one time, the big banana exporters had got tons and tons of bananas stacked up in the dock. And for one reason or another, the ship arrived late, or couldn't load it in time, or there was some government red tape. Somehow, they passed the date that if they would load the bananas by the time they reached wherever they had to go, they'd all be overripe and rotten. So they told anybody who wants bananas, come and get it. The devotees went with a pickup truck, picked up 10 tons, of bananas, came to the temple, and then the whole front of the temple is like big. But the bananas were still so green, you couldn't eat them, you see, because they go for a month or something before they'll reach, but they gave that, but they had calculated that by the time they reached, they'll be too gone. When they gave them away, they still had to wait a few weeks, so it's like, I remember the hall, it was like, maybe like half the room here is just like bananas stacked up.
They all got ripe.
Well, I wasn't there when they got ripe. I asked them what they did. They said, well, they had banana chutney, banana fried, banana every, they gave out banana, food for life, bananas. devotees are pretty creative when it comes to preparing prasadam. They can figure out how to use something like banana is no problem. Bitter melon may be a little tough, but bananas. So, Prabhupada, let's see here. In conclusion, I'll skip ahead. So the process of Yukta Vairagya is a science. Those who are interested in advancing in Krishna consciousness should carefully study the difference between Yukta Vairagya and Phalgu Vairagya. Surrendering to Lord Krishna and to Lord Krishna in his service is easy to perform, but it is not a whimsical matter. One must act strictly according to the guidance of the spiritual master and the Vedic literatures. Hare Krishna. Any questions? Nandan? Prabhupada here, he's just saying one, mainly he says one, and one time he said, a devotee not dependent on others, but depends solely on me, is clean inwardly and outwardly, who is expert and different to material things, without cares, free from all pains, and rejects all pious and impious activities very dear to me. Otherwise, he just says, he, one. Well, it doesn't none of this mean, obviously this is discussing primarily about devotees, but these standards are, Krishna is saying these are different, it says here in the Sanskrit, mat bhakta, my devotee, sa me priyaha. So when he starts off, being a devotee, that these devotees are dear to me. Now, we have to remember that practically everybody considers himself a devotee of God. I mean, in America, if you ask people, do you believe in God, 99% of people say they believe in God. I don't know if that's accurate anymore, but it's like 15-year-old statistics. But in America, most people believe in God. If they believe in God, it means they could probably consider themselves a devotee of God. But then when you get down to the practical So even in India, people may be karmakandis or gyanakandis. But they also respect God, respect Krishna. They would consider themselves some kind of a devotee of Krishna. Many of them, or most of them. But, so that's like a very general point. But here Krishna is saying, he's talking about his devotees. These are the qualities his devotees should have. And Prabhupada explains in the purport, coming again to the point of pure devotional service. In other words, he's already discussed pure devotional service, unadulterated, according to rules and regulations, work karma yoga, working for him, then other alternatives, then asceticism, meditation, so many other things. Then he's now coming again to the point of pure devotional service. The Lord is describing the transcendental qualifications of a pure devotee in these two verses. The next verse, probably, a few of a devotee's qualifications are further being described. So that verse 15 was an elaboration. Then again, Krishna is giving guidelines to devotees and how they should deal with material activities in 16 and 17 when they get material gain. The Prabhupada said, a pure devotee is neither happy nor distressed over material gain or loss. So these qualities are especially for the pure devotees. The people who do devotional service, those who do devotional service are also people. So it's quite, you can refer to them as people. Appropriate personalists. But it's describing here about devotees, what their standard is. We know what to question. But if someone wasn't a devotee and they read this, they say, well, if you do this, you'll become dear to me. It may also inspire them to be a devotee. So it goes. For the devotees, the verses are important because they say what one a devotee should do. And for someone who's not a devotee, they can these qualities are obviously very nice. People appreciate these qualities. I mean, most pious people appreciate these type of qualities. They expect that even their modern, senators and representatives and political leaders should have, many of these qualities. They kind of expect that. But, because eventually they get exposed for what they're really doing, and then it's a big scandal, and they get forced out of office and so on. But these are very nice qualities that anyone should have. But these qualities are especially for the devotee, to be a devotee of Krishna. So it inspires people to be a devotee. Materialists try to maintain such qualities, but it's very difficult to just do it by willpower without any devotion. Because the material nature is so strong, the modes of nature would drag you away, but if you take shelter of Krishna, then it's possible. Sometimes the devotee, due to not knowing what he should do, what he shouldn't do, may do something wrong and then be acting detrimentally to his devotional service. So therefore Krishna explains everything here. This is what a devotee should be doing. This is the standard. So if we're not up to the standard, we shouldn't be proud about it. We should be ashamed about it and try to come up to the standard. We should be concerned that we're not up to the standard, and therefore we try to do what's needed to get the purification to be in the proper standard. That's a glorious thing. That's why it's a fight with Maya. Declaring war on Maya, Prabhupada used that statement many times. Because to maintain this high standard means that we had to struggle against many obstacles Maya puts up. But our system of struggling is to take shelter of Krishna. Yes, Maharaji? While one is performing devotional service in the association of pure devotees and full Krishna consciousness, there are certain things which require to be vanquished altogether. The most important thing one has to surmount is weakness of the heart. The first fall down is caused by the desire to lord it over material nature. Thus one gives up the transcendental loving service of the Supreme Lord. The second weakness of the heart is that as one increases the propensity to lord it over material nature, he becomes attached to matter and the possession of matter. Problems of material existence are due to these weaknesses of the heart. In this chapter, the five verses describe the process of freeing oneself from these weaknesses of the heart, and the rest of the chapter, from the sixth verse through the end, discuss Purushottam Yoga. It is like sometimes a new devotee joins the temple or is thinking about joining the temple, and they get a weakness of heart. If I surrender, if I accept a guru, if I surrender, what am I going to miss out on? I won't be able to lord it over this material thing and that material thing. I won't be able to lord it over going to the cinemas, or I won't be able to do everything I want whenever I want it. I'm going to have to be in devotional service. And then you got a weakness of heart for surrendering to Krishna. Because they're thinking that all these things that I used to do or I could do, I won't be able to do. And they're not thinking that I'll get the highest spiritual ecstasy, that I'll be getting the greatest, you know, there's a weakness of heart, is they're just focusing on, you know, really just temporary little things that they got, that they're attached to lording it over, the idea of lording it over. So that's the weakness of heart that makes one hesitate or stops one from surrendering to Guru and Krishna, from really absorbing in a process of devotional service. And the second is when one already has surrendered to the first weakness of heart and is trying to, you know, one is like, has fallen down to a certain degree in actually doing some material activities, and they become attached to matter and the position of matter, so they don't want to give it up. So you try to preach to such people. You can see, like, some, they're not really into material things so much, but they have a desire. They think that, well, maybe I could be happy or enjoy, or if I be a devotee, what's going to happen to this or that thing? And then the next stage is like when this person is actually into those things, and they're attached and they don't want to let go. And they try to, they create so many excuses why they shouldn't do devotional service. And you try to preach to them, but actually what they're really, is they're just clinging on to these attachments. That's why Rupa Goswami said that if somebody's really decided that they want to enjoy material life, you can't convince them, because they're not really listening. They're not open. They don't want to be convinced. You can wake somebody who's asleep up. You can't wake somebody who's awake pretending he's asleep. If a devotee knows everything, but they decided, I just want to cling on to these material things, I'm not going to let go. No matter what you say, I'm not going to let go, you know. Still, devotees may try, but if you don't succeed, it's not. You know, as they see, like, it's easier to preach to new people than, say, an old person who's, due to this weakness of heart, fallen into material attachment again, because they don't want to listen to you. I already know everything. Why don't you do it? Right? You know. They'll give you so many reasons, because my temple president wasn't nice to me 10 years ago, or because this one was bad, that one, or that. It's because they probably explained, they got attached to this enjoying, and now they don't want to let go. So they'll come up with so many reasons. And those reasons can be, you know, presidents change, everyone's different, the things change. You know, life goes on. I think this is a very applicable instruction. I was just preaching to someone a few days ago about how that person should be doing devotional service. So how can I do devotional service when this other devotee is not doing? The other devotee is in Maya. They're not cooperating. They're not coming to Mangalarti. So how can I go to Mangalarti if they don't go? They're not doing their service. How can I do my service? The two things were not at all connected. Whether devotee A goes to Mangalarti doesn't mean that you have, you know, that you had to depend on that person going for you to go. There are many joint efforts, so, you know, if everybody cooperates together, we can do something really wonderful. You know, if everybody will help and cooperate with each other, we can do some, you know, like a festival doesn't work unless many people cooperate together. Rath yatras, feasts, you know, all these type of things require a joint effort. But here, this particular verse is really discussing the consciousness, of a devotee, to be a pure devotee. Like Srila Prabhupada, if he was dependent on his god brothers, would he have come to America? Everyone told him, don't go, why bother, how can you preach anyway to those materialistic people, they're in the mode of passion, ignorance. So if he was dependent on them to carry out each one of us has got the order of our guru, order of the Prabhupada and the disciples of Prabhupada and the disciples succession. That's our individual instruction. Now if we can get help from others, if we can take the good association of others, but Prabhupada said many times, we are all flying in the sky like birds flying, we are flying on our own. You know, nobody's going to pick us up on their back and fly for us. We have to do the devotional service ourselves. So there's no use of us saying, well, he's not chanting his japa, she's not chanting her japa, so how can I chant? And people say that sometimes, and it doesn't equate, doesn't make any sense. You be the example, who can say, who's going to be like, Prabhupada wasn't the most senior disciple, he wasn't the first sannyasi, he didn't even take sannyas directly from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But that doesn't matter, you see. But he just took the order of his guru to heart and he carried it out. And as much as he could take association, he didn't reject the association. And he never said, no, okay. He tried to get the association, tried to get the help, but when everyone else, when it came down to, the spiritual bottom line, no one was willing to participate or support in such a venture of such a magnitude that he did it himself. On a very smaller level, just in our own devotional service. Even as we got to go, someone so dedicated to go out and do their services, the book distribution, either go out and do it. Sometimes, like in Calcutta, Prabhupada told us, no cars, no taxis, you go by bus. So to go by bus meant wasting hours and hours of travel time. But at that time, Prabhupada said, I don't want you to waste money. You're spending so much on taxis, you go by bus, go by tram. I used to go by tram. So we are going by tram, by bus, and just to go to one place to the next, it is very tedious. But until we were producing enough results to warrant spending the money on taxis and cars, Prabhupada didn't permit it. So sometimes, even the devotees say, well, unless I get a driver, I can't go out and preach. Unless I got this one, I can't do. Unless I got that, they get so many conditions. But they would get everything if they just went out and did show they could do something, They probably very easily get, so many things. So this is mentality I find, especially among some of my Indian disciples. They get into a whole thing, well, that person's in Maya, so how can I be Krishna God? What does it matter? He's in Maya. Does it mean you have to be in Maya?